Looking up the skirt of the night. Look down, feel around.
Make me watch. We are a couple of failed filmmakers who are forever students of cinema on an eternal quest to watch more movies. I'm your host, E, and I'm joined by my co-host today, a couple of cutie patootsies. What's going on, Uncle Nat and Sean McGee? What's going on, you guys?
I like that the quote that I used in the first cut would have worked better in the second one. I don't see why we just can't use the first tape of the first time we recorded this. Just because it's a little sticky.
Just because it's a little sticky.
Now it hits.
Eric spilled something on his laptop.
Okay. This is a show where Sean and I trade off forcing one another to watch our favorite films. But before we get into all that, we want to thank you for listening wherever you happen to be listening from. You could be doing anything else with your time. We're happy you're here with us. Follow our socials in the show notes while scrolling down there. Please rate, review, give us 5 stars, and support us. Or join us on Patreon for exclusive shows. We have some entertaining stuff over there. Either one of you guys, what do you think we could be pairing with this film this week? Open floor to the co-host.
So weird suggestion. I honestly think you could pair it with a like Coming to America, just for like also you've got a bit of an 80s comedy, and you have a lot of people who like to wear disguises. So.
Yeah. I like that. Okay.
Also, we got young Gina Davis coming in the Fletch episode as well. So if you want to go, I thought of that organically. It's not a take two or anything.
And on today's episode, we have Nat's pick for the week and 82's Tootsie. We're gonna give our overall thoughts up top without spoiling, and then dive into this film with our world famous segments that break down the plot, performance, and our favorite behind the scenes stories. So without further ado, let's get into our review of 82's Tootsie.
Let me tell you about my client, Michael Dorsey. He was a fine actor, maybe a great actor. But for every role he wanted, there was a reason why he wasn't right.
Sorry, you're too tall.
I can be shorter.
No, I can't use you. Too short.
Oh, I can be taller.
Too moody. Next.
Too old.
Too stubborn.
You're too much trouble.
Too tough.
Too temperamental.
Too pushy.
Too difficult.
Michael, no one will hire you.
Just watch me.
Boy, did he show us. He auditioned for the female lead on a soap opera and became the hottest new actress in America. And you know what? No one knows his new identity, not even the girl he's madly in love with. Soon everyone will know that she's Dustin Hoffman and he's Tootsie.
All right, that was from the trailer of 1982's Tootsie. Logline, Michael Dorsey. An unsuccessful actor disguises himself as a woman in order to get a role on a trashy hospital soap. Put a nickel in the jar. This is directed by Sidney Pollack, shot by Owen Roizman. I didn't check to see how he said his name. Written by Larry Gelbert and Murray Scheisgel. This is starring Dustin Hoffman as Michael Dorsey, Dustin Hoffman as Dorothy Michaels, Jessica Lange as Julie Nichols, Terry Carr as Sandy Lester. We got Dabney Coleman as Ron Carlyle, Charles Durning as Les Nichols, Bill Murray as Jeff Slater, and Sidney Pollack himself as George Fields. So we starting as we always do, but this time thrown to the guest for the titular question. Natalie, why'd you make us watch this?
I love Tootsie. If you are part of our Patreon, you would know that you get a zine from time to time that that if you unfold it, has a watch view, a watch guide. And if you don't want to watch the theme, if you don't want to watch a horror movie, I just offer Tootsie because it's infinitely rewatchable. It is my, I don't know what else to watch. I'll put on Tootsie to the point where last time I watched it, I was like, I haven't seen it in a while. Is it a bit that I like Tootsie this much? I put it in, and it was just me screaming to myself, no, it's just this good. It's funny. It has really phenomenal performances. I think, like, as a woman, it's, like, really rare to see a movie from the 80s that I'm like, actually, I think you might like ladies. I think we might respect women. This is cool. And yeah, one of my favorite VHS pranks, not to age myself really hard, that's ever happened to me, is my copy of Tootsie had, it, like my VHS copy had been, had met its day. So I go back home and I see on, like, and I see in my parents' VHS collection just a tape that's labeled Shark Week. And I'm like, oh, that'll be fun. I'll watch an old Shark Week. I pull it out and it's labeled Tootsie on the actual tape. Do you know how excited I was for a filmed off TV copy of Tootsie? I save it for later. I'm ready for a full viewing moment. I put it in, opening credits of Tootsie. Then it went to Crocodile Dundee 2. End credits of Tootsie. I still have it. If we want that viewing party of Crocodile Dundee 2, I can offer it. But
The only thing that would make it better is if there was an episode of Shark Week actually sandwiched in the middle of Crocodile Dundee.
God, yeah,
that would be incredible.
So you had like a turducken.
I've never had such a whirlwind of emotion given to me by one VHS since The Ring. I just, but
that's what we're missing out on with the loss of physical media these days. Oh, yeah. Is you don't get to have that roll of the dice.
Is it something you stumbled upon, or how did you get introduced to Tootsie?
So it was a movie that my mom had on, like we would have on, older movie channels. And occasionally she would pull me in to be like, sit down, watch this part. And, because the line that, Bill Murray has where it's like, I want people to come out of my play and say, what happened? Is like a family joke of my family says that any time they see something where they're like, what happened? And they didn't get it if it was like too weird or something. So it's like, oh, this is the context of that joke we make. And then I wanted to watch more because it's great. And I'm never going to say no to a crossdresser movie. I just won't.
Yeah, naturally.
I love it. McGee, first time, long time?
I think this is the first time I've watched it all the way through. I think that this is something that I like Natalie said, you like have to watch when you're in film school at some point. But I definitely, watching the second half of this seemed new to me. Or at least I definitely was the first time watching it after having worked in the film industry for a significant period of time. So was watching it with new eyes regardless. It's fun. It's very joyful. It's very silly. The pace of it is hilarious to me. Just like the complete lack of fat on it, where they like using the edit as a joke is like a thing that we love to do in general. But the pace of this edit is like impatient with itself to the movie's benefit. I think like it's just so lean and so well put together. There's some stuff that I have some questions about for sure. And there's some stuff that I think, like, to Natalie's point about it being infinitely rewatchable, like even watching it on my second viewing this week, there were things that I thought were issues that I had that I'll get into when we get post spoilers, where I'm even kind of questioning myself and like how much I like the ambiguity in some of the relationships between the characters, where there's things aren't so tidy. Like people are real and human, and like that's part of what makes it beautiful. And like I'm coming around on the infinitely rewatchable part of it for
it's
sure.
It's infinitely rewatchable. You'll get
anything. What about you? What was your thoughts?
Yeah, I think I kind of fall somewhere in the middle of you two. I'm definitely not like the sycophant that Ned is. With
okay,
spell,
but I definitely as long as sycophant has a skateboard on it, then I'm a sycophant. I'm like a really cool guy. That
you're
likes
a sycophant.
Sycophant. That's but I'm not. So it's not a film I return to often, but during some kind of, you know, if I'm a Dustin Hoffman marathon man, or, you know, watch All the President's Men kind of thing.
You were even disappointed in yourself.
I was a little how much you've been mentioning All the President's Men as your, like, go-to Hoffman joint. That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's
for whatever reason, that, you know, for whatever reason, you know, the other one sticks in mind. It's not even like Meet the Fockers kind of
no, you're like,
the other one that, like leaps to mind when I think Hoffman. But no, I grew up in the same generation.
That's the end of the podcast.
Yeah, I'm
We're
too
done.
Old. I wouldn't understand.
But yeah, and I like that we all kind of had an emerging theme in this inside baseball films on films, where we're all kind of highlighting actor bits. And with this one, this is a very actor's movie with a capital A. I think it's an interesting showcase for everybody involved. And one of the things I found interesting in my a little bit of my research with Hoffman is his quote associated with this movie and finding Sidney Pollack to kind of take this journey with him. Because he, at one point, he gets the rights of the script. Not necessarily. Don't quote me on that. He gets the rights of the project, right? I know he has like creative control and has to like seize that to Sidney. And he says, quote, you hope you and the director are the right fighting combination, end quote. Which I found really interesting with Hoffman, because it feels like, you know, Michael Dorsey and Dennis Hoffman are very, you know, there's very thin layers between the two of those. And it really feels like there's a lot of, like, Hoffman putting himself in this one. And there's this combative nature, not only, you know, to, you know, the character, but also to what you hear about Hoffman offset and some, you know, the behavior onset as well. So, I think it's just interesting to think of the creative process that way. And I do think it does render diamonds when you kind of create that pressure, like you and your actor kind of butting heads, or at least trying to discuss vigorously, like, what the right approach to this scene, this moment, whatever it is. You know, there was a pretty popular one that just happened with James Gunn and Corn Sweat, right? Well, we just that was part of the marketing of Superman, as the little quote unquote fight they had on set about how to play a certain thing. But you see how working through the creative process with somebody that's willing to butt heads with you and disagree if they feel strongly about something, this could be very valuable for the project. I do think, if I'm going to be the very light criticisms I want to have with this movie, I'm going to have two. One, Sidney's not necessarily a comedy guy. So at times, I think the jokes, depending on the scenario or who was able to sell it, could land a little flat, depending on what it was. Because it's. I think he doesn't give moments. How do I want to explain this? Let me just end it there. I'll get to my criticism a little later. And the third act, I'm not necessarily a criticism, but I really want to. I'm sorry, the second half of the second act, not the third act. The second half of the second act. We won't spoil it now. We'll get to spoilers later. I really want to dive into that with you guys. I really want to sort of like figure out like what was the, for somebody like Dustin that we know is an actor with a capital A. We're digging into everything, and if you listen to any kind of behind the scenes of this, Jessica Lange is much more of a. You know, I just like doing it, you know what I mean? Like, I just like to play pretend, whereas Dustin is like, we got to dive into every word of this, and like, why is my character saying this, and why are we moving? Like, the tomato bit isn't far-fetched in this movie. I'm just like, I'm not going to sit down.
I played an endive salad that put the whole theater on its knees.
Exactly.
Would have blown your socks off.
So I find that to be really interesting, and then how we deal with that second half thing, and I think as I'm watching it, I'm loving the conceit. This is, you can picture a lot of scenarios. And this goes, I mean, time immemorial of men dressing up is in drag and performing. We have ancient Greeks. There's big in the Chinese theater. This here. Like, I find this a really interesting thing to explore just on an actor's, discourse. So those two things aside, I think Dustin Hoffman is brilliant in this one. I think the lengths that they go to sort of like, what does this mean for this person? And it is a comedy. It's played for jokes, but you could tell there's a lot of forethought in the movement, the performance, the vocal performance, the wardrobe. Like, and then discovering, I think, the intimacy of what it means. And I'm not a woman, so forgive me. I don't want to talk out of turn.
On what it means to be a woman if you're Dustin Hoffman.
but I think there's interesting things brought up of knowing, how do I put this? Knowing,
for being 82, it has a lot. It's a lot more progressive than you'd think.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot more human than you'd think, yeah.
Like, knowing how attractive somebody is can regulate how far somebody can go in a particular field. And I think how they address that with Tootsie and Dustin realizing I'm not as attractive as other women. So it's interesting how he how he deals with that in certain scenarios, and not to get into spoilery, but he'll like pick out costumes that flatter more of his body type and what he wants to try to get across, and things that like you see him in real time, well not real time, but you see him in the flow of the film figuring out the complexities of like what initially felt like it's just an actor's gig and I can hurry up and get a job this way, like kind of figuring him delving into that gets really interesting. That I wish in some way I'll address some, you know, some of my criticism in the second half of the second act of this. But yeah, I'm really happy to dig into this. I can't wait till we break down into the spoilers. Why don't we jump into how he washes? Is that important enough? Do we want to talk about? Do we have any?
I mean, you can watch it for free on YouTube right now. So
yeah, there's a straight up full copy on YouTube.
Yeah,
if you're on a budget.
Also,
not,
I have a VHS of it that it actually is Crocodile Dundee 2. So,
if you want to watch Crocodile Dundee 2,
if you'd like the opening and the closing credits of Crocodile Dundee 2, come to my house.
I want to champion the Criterion edition of this one.
Yeah.
I think there's two great documentaries on. I mean, the first one is one from 82 that they shot in 82. It feels like, and it's all like. I prefer the 82 one to the 2008 one, I want to say, where it's the you see like it's almost like an echo kind of editing pattern to where you're seeing the scene develop, you know, across the table and like a little table read between Sydney and Dustin, and they're kind of performing on set, and you're seeing all this BTS of them kind of performing, and it just feels like it kind of dwells more into the what it took to sort of build this project. The 2008 one has a little some more retrospective ideas and some more current, you know, interviews with an older Hoffman and older Sydney, but two very great documentaries on this, and then a director's commentary with Sydney that I think is very valuable as well. So yeah, get some got a chance, grab that Criterion or are available for free. Anybody else think who do we think has this on their shelves? Who's another who's somebody we can think that's loves Tootsie as much as is Nat?
I know for a fact that John Waters does. It's I wouldn't say like it's a queer icon of a film necessarily, but in like kind of the same way Mrs. Doubtfire is, where it's like there's a weird amount of like, oh, straight men solving problems by dressing in drag is hilarious, is like definitely a subgenre of like weird comedy queers being like, oh, this is so funny. But I don't know. I think that this is also I can see this being on a lot of like actors. I think Christian Bale probably likes this.
I can see that.
If you're into transformative,
part
playing, I think you really like this.
You know.
Also, I bet Tina Fey loves this. Okay. Tina Fey loves this movie.
Let me hit you with the flip side
very
of
New York, very comedy.
She like does her fake name when she's in 30 Rock is Dorothy Michaels.
Oh yeah. So. And 30 Rock, yeah, it feels
and she
very...
looks like Dorothy Michaels a little bit. Dorothy Michaels.
I don't know why this springs by, but I'm betting you Timothée Chalamet. I'm betting you this on a red carpet. Like four films kind of thing, like Letterbox films.
Man.
I can see during
he
that press
looks
tour
like Tootsie a
Marty
little
Supreme.
Bit.
And I don't know.
He can do a Tootsie
reboot.
Yeah.
Yeah,
with a capital A. It is kind of on the like. I think he obviously his I don't know, credibility, but his image took a little bit of a hit during this during this press run.
Yeah.
So
his
I feel
image
like...
has been having a hit for a bit. I just think they wanted that to go out to make up for the fact he wasn't gonna get that Oscar. But if he's they're mean at me, like he wasn't gonna get that.
I don't even think. I think that it was entirely. I actually saw this. I wish I could credit the person who had like put this theory in front of me.
It was Adam Bell in an article he wrote for his Substack.
But they were basically saying that, like the entire bit is like kayfabe. Like,
oh, really?
He's doing it.
He's turning heel.
Yeah. The whole thing is him basically still doing the like Marty Supreme character in the press run for the Marty Supreme character. So it's like the whole everything about it is still in like the kayfabe of the press run.
Well, also, I just think it was communicated all that well. You know what I mean? Like, I saw there was a bit where him and his representation, and he's like arguing or yelling at his representation as if he's like Marty. He's doing it as Timothée Chalamet, but he's playing it as Marty Supreme. I just think the campaign of I'm going to be slightly a douchebag didn't like. I think maybe that's what we assume about him. And so when he starts playing it up, people are just like, well, you're kind of giving me the ick now. Like, you're unlikable. And not necessarily I see you doing it for the bit. So I think if you take him now, a likable kind of Timothée Chalamet, give him this kind of thing. And if we see him, do we do a twist? Do a twist with him as a Tootsie? Could work in this one. He's like, oh, he's learning.
It's a documentary right now. Right. Well, I just think the important thing with Timothée Chalamet is to remember
the only way I'm going to say his name now.
He is part of the Kardashian team, and what better marketers? Mm-hmm. What better spin doctors?
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't be like he's literally he eats dinner with the master. Just whatever's happening from his camp, and just know it's 80% like. Contrived.
Wow.
You can't. You're gonna get fleeced, you know.
Oh, before we go out, we show somebody to get them to watch. We got to put on Tootsie for somebody for the first time. They only want to watch a scene. What do you think? He's like, you're gonna watch this, and I bet you're gonna want to watch a little bit more. What do we think?
I think the scene where he's trying to explain to George that that Julie thinks he's a lesbian or Dorothy's a lesbian. but Sandy thinks that he's gay. Or it's like, well, Sandy thinks I'm gay. We'll sleep with her. Well, she still thinks I have, and she still sleeps.
I have.
Thinks I'm gay.
She still thinks
oh,
I'm
no.
gay. He's like, oh, okay,
well, that's a
wow.
problem. And it's just so quick, and it's so back and forth, and it's like, if you
it's
don't
so
like
funny,
this
yeah.
banter, this is not going to be your movie. If like this isn't something you're all right with, it's a good litmus test, but it's also what would sell me on seeing it.
Yeah. That's all the scene I picked as well, because I think that the banter between him and his agent is every single one of those scenes is so good and is such like a secret backbone for the movie to like kind of just kind of I don't know, it really just dials up the comedy of it in a different way. It's so fast. It's so funny. But this that one in particular was my favorite iteration of it with the. He's like, but isn't she a lesbian? He's like, no. They're talking about Dorothy as if she's like in the room with them. Like, but isn't she a lesbian?
Is it stepping on my combo of crap? It's definitely the scene I want to highlight a little later. I went actually with the first George kind of blowout where he doesn't get the part.
Oh,
or he doesn't get the audition.
And he doesn't get Iceman Cometh,
This is the coast. This is the coast, George. Like, I love that bit. I love that line. We're all on the same page. Kind of the Sydney, Dustin chemistry that they were having going back and forth in this film. I really, really enjoyed that too. So.
Hello, boys and ghouls and everyone in between. Are you ever bored on the
second
Thursday of every month in Chicago? Then come on down to the Music Box Theater for Music Box Bingo. It is free to play and free to win from 7 to 10 with your good time gals, Gotti God and Uncle Ant. See you at the reunion.
All right, welcome to the focus group. We're breaking down the plot. From here on out, we will be spoiling the film. Starting with the start with the big bang. Does that opening sizzle or fizzle? I mean, it opens with teeth in a jar, so you know why Natalie picked this movie.
I love teeth. Okay. If you have spare teeth and you're not doing anything with them, I will give them the home that they greatly deserve.
What is it about teeth? What is it about teeth that does it for you?
Well, they're outside bones. But I just think that teeth and bones in general are really interesting. And I think the fact that it's like, oh, and just you lose all your teeth and that's fine. And so I also have this project I really want to do. That's a like old school 40s, like Morning Veil, but instead of it being Swiss dotted with like pearls at Swiss dotted with children's teeth. So I don't have
the most the most haunted object I've ever heard of in my entire life.
So I don't have as many teeth as I'd like. I'm just saying.
About it? I don't know. I'm actually afraid.
Okay,
no,
so,
don't ask
okay,
questions you don't want the no, answer to, right, brother.
Never this mind. Is a great business. I'm a businesswoman. I am the Alan Cummings of this podcast, and we know that. I'm not even joking. So my idea is that, you know, okay, you have the tooth fairy thing. Send them to me. I'll have a P.O. box, and then I'll send you back a tiny letter that I'll fill with glitter that says, here's a little token. Thank you for your tooth. And then they'll get a token, and they can cash it in for something they actually want with their parents later, and their parents just have to, like, teach them how to use the mail. So we're supporting the post office, and you know I'm a slut for the post office. And I get teeth. And they get magic. Everyone's winning.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah.
And the fact that people act like this is creepy is a problem for me, because I think that y'all just aren't ready for whimsy.
You really, if you just pitched this whole thing and omitted the whole, like, what you were going to do with the teeth
part. Doesn't matter, but I know what I'm doing. They're not doing anything with the teeth. Y'all are just letting it stay at the bottom of your jewelry box. I know you all are. All of you.
That's so
all
funny.
Of our listeners. Give me your children.
What a weird thing that we've co-signed to, but you know what?
Hey, you brought it up. I wasn't going to. You. It was on my rider. I don't talk about teeth unless you're wanting me to pitch my teeth scam.
Or unless we want to talk about the opening of this film. What's going on there? What do you think? Opening of Tootsie here.
So, I love it. If you've ever been in theater, you always get, like, your starter, like, makeup. Like, here, learn how to do your own makeup so you can do your basics. So that way the person who's actually doing your stage makeup can come in and do whatever additional things. And you seeing that immediately, this is a story about transformation and not being enough, no matter what you've done, I think is a really good way to establish exactly who this guy is. And the fact that most of the audience, like, we just see the blank black theater, we see the darkness of not knowing your audience, which if anyone's ever performed on stage is horrifying. It's like performing for the abyss.
Yeah,
that's what I like about the opening.
Yeah, I'm kind of right there with you in vain of that. Like, this is the according to Sydney, the last thing they shot, in the shooting schedule, and it really strengthens the spine of the story in the same way McGee was saying, like, the backbone of the Sydney Dustin sort of interactions are sprinkled through to kind of add context and for Michael to sort of, like, play bounce off against. It's the drama around the, you know, identity and gender roles and reinforcing them with these like tight close-ups of him sort of like changing his appearance and using unique things. I think it's really valuable to kind of, I can see how he'll pull that off later on in the film. I will talk about, you know, this is actually ends up as my shot for shot, because the way in which this is shot, I'm very curious. Like, Owen, you know, he's a cinematographer. Well, he did The Exorcist and French Connection, and I mean, he's a cinematographer's legend. I do find the film to be interesting. Like, a lot of medium close-ups, a lot of above the waist. It's sort of a shot as if we're in that kind of like soap style. But I think this is some of the interesting like tighter close-ups that he affords in ways that we may not see throughout the film, that I think is really interesting to see here. Well, is there something, Nat, you've seen this 2 billion times? Anything in this film you caught that you hadn't really noticed before? There's got to be something. Like, I'm sorry. No, I've tried this with you before, and you kind of shut me down. Let me know.
No, I mean, we're into the past spoilers, but so I've always had, I really relate and loved Harry Garr in this movie. Like,
yeah.
So I've always kind of like, Harry Garr is of my comedians, the one that I'm like, I feel like that's the energy I bring to the table. It's just like, just your slightly neurotic, chaotic friend that just has the best intentions, but is a little ditzy occasionally, but like also incredibly intelligent in other moments. And that's what I bring to the table.
I love
but,
it. Doesn't let personal issues get in, what is it, in the way of professional responsibilities or professional commitments?
I'm gonna take my chocolates and go. But yeah, I'm always so mad that we don't talk about her again, because it's like, so the implication is just he is in his roommate's play with a woman who is livid at him for the rest. Oh, that I would love to watch that movie. Of him and Terry Garr fighting through an entire play, and
if Bill Murray doesn't write that animosity into the play, then he's a fool,
because
he's got gold on his hands with these two actors that just this woman who absolutely would rip this man's guts out on stage if you
and rightfully so. He's horrible to her. But then I realized just in the last time I watched it, I'm like, well, she can really channel her rage now, and that matters. That is what she was having an issue
That's
with.
That's her arc.
Beginning. Her arc is she can channel her rage, because no one will hate Michael more than her.
I'm going to have to remember that when I get stuck somewhere. What was that? I remember that when I get stuck in fines somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. That's one of my favorite lines, where she's like, whew, I'll have to remember that.
Next, if I ever have to play getting trapped in something.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Terry Carr is excellent. Yeah, we don't give her enough for the neurotic the neuroses that she can play, because I think this is even a little different than where Sean shut it out earlier, the After Hours performance of her doing the where she's kind of she's even more unhinged in that performance. It feels like, is it like she has a modicum of kind of she understands, she has an emotional awareness that's really sharp in this film, where she's, I'm not going to be able to repeat it verbatim, but when she's what would she say? I know something or another, I need to go through this, or I'm just going to feel like this until I don't feel like this anymore.
But
essentially I'm just upset because I don't like being lied to, where she's aware of whatever the pattern of the spiral she's about to go through, but and then the professional commitment.
And she's giving him so many outs, she's dealing with it in so many healthy ways. She really is on the page, the hero of this film.
And one of my favorite things about her, how she plays an actress is I know both of you probably had plenty of really talented, intuitive, fabulous actresses in your life where the amount of, so I would say that one of my friends is this, she's a performance artist, but she does a lot of, she has to be so aware of everything about her body at all times. And her staying confident and happy and present and able to celebrate herself, but also being aware of what things will be told to her every single day of her life, is insane. The fact she's able to balance it at all and be somewhat sane is incredible. And the fact that all the actresses we meet are kind of having to find different ways to cope with that is a really fabulous element that's under the ground. One's drunk all the time.
Can I make you guys some sandwiches here? Little compliment sandwiches?
Yeah, no.
It's gonna be a little toasty.
I'm giving a little
serving
char.
Of heat on this one. I love the conceit of this film. I think it's very strong, and you can see a lot of scenarios. I have a little trouble with the second half of the second act. And this is Dorothy goes to the farm, and we have this sort of late 70s, early 80s montage. It's, to my understanding of the film, it's played as sort of a platonic support system thing, but I just don't buy it. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't buy an actress, even with that strong of a bond, come up to my dad's farm for the weekend, and we're just I just have a hard time playing this part of the film out, and it doesn't feel as maybe believable to me in other areas of it. I do think it the resolution we get to with the father is interesting at the end, but I'm not sure the juice was worth the squeeze, because this is the maybe 10 minutes of the film where I'm just like, I don't know. I don't know how much I'm buying what's happening here. Your guys' thoughts. Does this scene work? Obviously, it's help me out here. Your guys'
My call out for you is, I don't think you've ever been part of a female-to-female friendship, so work on that.
work on it.
So, like, the platonic relationships that I have with some of my friends that are like, we're both femme. It's like they come over to my parents' house. They have been like part of really big moments in my family's life, and it's like you've held my nephew and that kind of thing, where it's like, we're not just, hey, maybe go to a barbecue here and there. It's like, no, you've helped clean out my grandmother's house after she died, like that kind of relationship. Yeah. And if we look at it, like, Julie is a single unmarried mother in the 80s, part of a trashy soap. Her mother is gone. She loves her daddy, and like, she has this older woman that is giving her, there's not a level of competition with her, which is also a pretty like beautiful experience to have with another woman. So Julie is looking for a connection and not really knowing how to feel about that, where it's like the idea of like having a, and that's why we see her turn so much when like there, it's not just like a homophobia thing. It's a, I thought I had a deep friendship with you. Mm-hmm. And now I'm realizing the foundation isn't friendship. The foundation is that you wanted me and everyone wants me. Like, that's how I'm treated in this world.
Yeah.
So, like, I see it from my perspective as a very, like, I think it slows shit down a little bit. But I do see what it makes the betrayal that she feels hit a little bit more. So
I'm wondering if I can make just one.
Yeah.
Because I understand the friend bit of it, like two platonic friends.
Yeah.
This is like almost like a coworker I've spent a few months with, and then we're inviting you over to my dad. That's where I think the strangeness comes. It's like, you guys don't. It's not presented
it's
to us as like you guys are too.
Shit. Actors think that they should get matching tattoos when they're in a room for longer than 2 seconds.
Theater kids do tend to bond a little fast and hard.
And Dorothy changed the entire culture of the sexist, toxic show they were part of.
And that's where I think they're leaning on. I think that, like, this is a mentor. She's changed the customs of the show.
This is mommy. I want you to marry my dad. I would like my dad to marry you.
I think if we had written it more of, I look up to you and I want to hook you up with my father, that kind of feels like, I wish. At least, am I the straight dude that's kind of like we're trying to press that up? But it doesn't feel like we get there. It happens organically, kind of. But I was like, I think I wanted Jessica Lange to have more of a hand in, I'm trying to set you up with my father. And Dustin's coming in at it as a, I want to get closer. I want to get closer to you over the weekend. It just feels like it's like a 20 or 15, 20 minutes where I'm just like, I don't buy you as coworkers being this close for this. And then the father. Hey, I guess I'm. Sean, what are your thoughts on this? I love Nats. I've kind of pulled me a little bit more over to her side than I was in the beginning of this. Maybe you can go to push me over the edge here. Does this scene work for you better
I'm in between the two of you. I think where I do think that there is obviously elements that we aren't necessarily connecting with because it's not a story that is connected with us as hard in our lives. I think that this whole arc would work better, and it kind of, for me, and I think it sort of fixes what you're getting at, if Jessica Lange rejects him at the end of the movie, I think it fixes a lot of my problems. Because then it's Terry Garr disappearing from the movie is then the thing that he lost that he should have appreciated. And him trying to get closer to her, to Jessica Lange, and like, you know, Jessica Lange trying to set him up with her dad or whatever, like, that scheme shouldn't work for him. It shouldn't pay off. Like, it's bad. It's a bad plan.
Can we all
have
faith it won't?
So I think that, like, realistically, and I think the movie does a really good job of depicting that Dustin Hoffman is a dirtbag. Like, especially the scene that he has where he's having the like showdown with the director when the director comes to pick up Jessica Lange when they're about to break up or whatever, where he just says his own words like back at him, where the director basically tells him all of the things that like justifies his own position by describing exactly what he's doing to Sandy. And so it's like, oh, okay, like the movie's very aware that Dustin Hoffman's character sucks shit and is a hypocrite. So him actually, the story paying off at the end, I think if it just didn't pay off, it would fix a lot of the structural things with me that all those kind of things, other stuff isn't lining up. I don't know. That's just me.
Can I ask, I don't want to bear down too much on the criticisms at all. This is going to be the very last thing I want to say about
this. I didn't make it. I'll be fine.
But I am, since we're here at the end, the only other thing that I wish that we could have incorporated a little bit was the resolution of the film is, or what I should say is the soap opera and the reveal of Michael takes a back seat to the resolution of the relationship between Michael and Julie. And it seems like we use this one as a joke, I've actually been a man and it's you know, God damn it, or I knew there was a reason that she didn't like me. But I kind of thought there were going to be repercussions maybe during my first viewing, or maybe that's what I feel of, like, what does it mean that you've been on this show doing this for, you know, a year, and then we get to this point and it's like a soap opera reveal. It's really funny in that way, but are there other people that are hurt by this, or their careers, like, is it sort of like a,
he's out of his contract now. This was the only, they wanted to keep him as Dorothy, and he's like, this is unsustainable. So, you know, he does it to get out. But, it would be a phenomenal post-credit scene, is just to have, like, that writer's room. Be like,
I have a studio note for this.
Yeah, please.
Do you really? Yeah, there's something where I'm like, I wanted the show feels like, We've based a lot of the feeling or the emotional through line of this through the soap opera, and then it feels like it ends on kind of a punchline, but the emotional resolution of the film is the relationship, which I think we're getting there. This is an actor showpiece. I understand, Dustin, and this is the where we're at with it. But I don't know. Is that a weird sort of take for you guys? Does that feel? Maybe the studio note is aligned with that.
It's not a satisfying ending. It just isn't. But you know, it's also life doesn't have satisfying endings. And I think
so. Well,
as that flow.
That's because I'm not writing life, baby. Because I've got a scene that I think would tie it a little bow on this. I think it's a really funny joke to go out on, and I think it fixes your problem. I think after we get the emotional resolution scene, he should get a call from his agent. We get one last agent back and forth. The studio is claiming that the reveal was a plan all along, and they're not ending his contract.
Oh, 100%. But then he'd still be getting what he wanted, because he just gets to be actually like Michael then.
Yeah. Well, I think she should reject him, and then he should get the call that the studio's not ending his contract. They're claiming that it was a bit that they planned all along.
And
that ratings are through the roof.
He gets a call that he's actually in the Eleanor Roosevelt show.
Just so I don't butcher this. What's the Greek? Is this not who rolls up the boulder?
Sisyphus.
It feels like we need that sort of like Greek tragedy ending to it, where he's been a dirtbag lightly. Has like, I wanted some kind of like, now you're locked into the contract wherever you're gonna play, and we figure out who I forget what the character's name was at the end, whoever cousin of the son of the father he says that he is before he pulls up. Like, you're that character now. I think that could have been, we needed something of to help me. I wanted to tie it all. I love. Awesome. I so much appreciate you guys putting up with my two critiques on this one.
I mean, it's valid. Sometimes the movie just meanders, and I've always chalked it up to it being structured a little bit more realistically. It feels like, so there's like a couple different theater, since it's like definitely it's a movie about movies, but it's also like very about theater. There's a bunch of like very grounded techniques that it's kind of using acting wise. That's why it doesn't hit like, hi, I'm a comedy in 82. It hits a little bit more like, you know, but
I would actually,
in my observation,
it's that like acting school inside baseball shit too. That was actually what I had for my compliment sandwich, was that it does, obviously, like we were saying before, like there's a lot of the parts of it that are like you know, women in relationships with women and women's like relationship with being in the workplace. And, you know, there's stuff like that that I'm aware of as a man, but I'm obviously can't comment on the lived in experience of it for sure. The actor stuff, though, there is some stuff in there that it feels so lived in that I'm like, well, I know that's authentic as fuck. Like Sandy pocketing food at every opportunity gets a laugh out of me every fucking time. Because I have been there. I have done that. I have been eyeballing catering, just waiting for them to start closing up shop. Look, I'm just wrapping cable over by the catering truck. Like, you mind throwing some foil on top of that tray? I throw that bad boy in my car right now. Yeah.
You're a little crafty. Just see, like, what you guys about to throw out? Licorice? I love it.
Her pocketing the food is such a good bit. Like, all the coaching stuff is so specific. It's just a great slice of life that you can tell is lived in. The, like, you're a breakthrough for women in the workplace, and it took a man to do it as a core.
Ooh.
Feels so poisonous, and it made me so nervous. But I do think, especially on the rewatch, I think it's well set up with the improv. Like, even in the first scene, the like baby steps up from her helping up Jessica Lange and like having to improv her way to get the timing right because the other doctor like can't adjust his lines even though the people aren't in the right position. And that like slowly leading up to the, like, you know, smacking him so that he doesn't kiss her on camera, and like that gaining that confidence to then be able to speak up and do more things. Like, I think it's set up very organically, but the end result of it, when the character says, like, you're a breakthrough for women, feels so bad. It feels so bad to hear.
Well, and it's him, like, realizing later, like, when he's talking to George and just being like, see, I could do Eleanor Roosevelt. I, like, she could have a show, like, just being ready to be like, I've got things to say to women. It's like, you're not a woman, though. It's like, no, you are a man that has had to, like, adjust how he's able to walk through the world to where it's in a safer way. And even then, he's getting assaulted constantly. So.
Yeah. Immediately, in fact.
Immediately gets assaulted. Same guy comes back to the apartment. It's crazy.
Yeah.
This is a crazy scene.
Oh my gosh. It's honestly, I think...
Murray plays that so fucking well, where he's just like, what the fuck is going on?
Well, even the like, after he leaves, just, you slut. Don't. Rape is not a laughing matter. And just him, like, having to break down how that felt was just, like... So I have a weird... This is a little spicy from the podcast, I understand. I have a weird thing with men... When men mention rape in movies. Most women do, but it's, like... I view that this is, like, a chainsaw. If you use it right, it can actually make a statement and make art. If you use it wrong, it is the messiest thing. Everyone's dead. Everything's destroyed. Don't touch it. But I even feel like the fact that there's a joke in here, but it has space for just the first time he's had to... It's like he's felt hunted before, but never to this extent. It's like such an interesting spot of, like, as you watch him go from being like, I'm Dorothy, to being like, this is not sustainable. This is not sustainable. I can't do this anymore. I've got to get out of this. Is real. So
Yeah. I love
Sorry,
it.
Brought it down a bit.
No. That
No. It's absolutely like, it's the weird dichotomy of this movie where it's like, there's parts of it that feel like they're gonna be iffy, but then there's some other stuff that they just nail so fucking well where you're like, no, like, this should feel weird. It's like,
it is.
Okay.
Gene, you're in charge of the entertainment.
I've got a great group. They'll be perfect. The Cutie Patooties.
The what?
It's a girl group I've been putting together. Hey, I found these wigs in the trash. I say we start a girl group. We'll call them the Cutie Patooties. Who's in?
I'll do it.
Great, but you're gonna need a stage name. What's your real name?
Dottie Minerva.
Well, now you're Misty Gish.
I'll join too.
Great, let's call you Dottie Minerva.
Here, step into my headquarters quickly while Eric isn't listening. Just move those boxes. Yeah, just look up for that pasta and you can just sit at it. Just sit on the floor. Okay, so I've been getting these visions. A vision of an ominous future for the podcast where we need your help to look through the older episode. There's clues scattered from the future in the previous episodes. And we need extra eyes, yes. We need you to get your friends involved and maybe send them an episode of a movie that they've already seen or a movie that you'd like to talk to them about. And get the link. Get the link right now. Don't forget. Pause while you're listening to this bit. I'll just ramble for a minute here while you look through the feed for an episode to send a friend. Yes, another vision of the future I've seen where there's terrible, terrible advertisements infecting the podcast, and only you can stop it by going to our Patreon and tossing us a few dollars. Yes, a few dollars could hold back the evil waves of sports betting and TV dinners sent in the mail that are somehow supposed to be healthy and responsible choices. Even though TV dinners used to be shorthand for, like, giving up. Anyway, I've got to get back to the episode before Eric gets suspicious. But did you find an episode to send to a friend? Did you have a friend in mind? Text them before it's too late!
All right, welcome back from break. We're going under the lights, breaking down performances, starting here with best performance. Do we want to, you know what, I actually want to explore some of the secondary characters before we get into Dustin Hoffman, who I think we should spend a few minutes on and what he brought to the role. But people like Dabney Coleman, Ron Carlyle, this is the older gentleman, the
creepy doctor, yeah.
But what is he? I don't know. Was he a surgeon?
He's like the main doctor,
administrator. Yeah, the one that she has to deal with or has to kiss. I like his,
the pedophile in chief.
Yeah, exactly. I love his whole shtick. I love his whole bit. Him not being able to adjust, like we mentioned earlier, like him just being stuck in his ways. Him like he plays. He plays the asshole so perfectly in this one, and there's absolutely no redeeming kind of like quality to him. But since he's so foolish in the way that he does it, I like seeing him kind of fall on his face repeatedly.
And it's a good archetype to actually point out is the creepy old man that everyone's like, he's harmless, but it's like, no, this is a predator.
Yeah,
he just is able. Yeah. Like, that's why he gets away with stuff. Like, there's several people I can think of immediately where I'm like, no, old man stuff doesn't work with me. Get out of here.
The tongue.
Yep.
We mentioned...
the tongue.
We mentioned Gene a little earlier. It's interesting how, because in Fletch, this is like almost like the same amount of screen time or the issue that we had. Like, we thought she's going to be a bigger role. She's going to go on to...
Gina.
I was like, oh, man. Damn, Gina. I got no money. Bill Murray.
I love all the things that she says where it's like when all the fans are clustered around her, where they're asking her questions about like how she administered the dose, and she's like, I didn't write this shit.
She's like, I didn't write this shit.
You know, just...
It's so funny.
It's like the most, like, dude, this is my job right now. I'm trying to do something else. Like, behavior. I love it.
She's fantastic.
And then you said this is the right little garnish of Bill Murray. Wanted to kind of explore this a little bit with you guys. Bill Murray, better character actor, better supporting... kind of a presence in film. I'm thinking like Wes Anderson. Does he play better in supporting roles in this kind of vein? Where you give him a nice little 20 minutes coming off the bench, he'll get you 12, maybe two rebounds, a couple steals, and just kind of play that bench role. What do we think about Bill Murray, a little garden
in Space Jam? Also, I think this in Space Jam.
Yeah, he is. So don't get me wrong. I like my. My MySpace handle back in the day was Marry Me Bill Murray, really? If we're being honest. And well, then I found
talking
out
about he... dating ourselves.
Yeah, no, don't worry about it. I'm I'm over.
You just might as well read your birthday out loud on the podcast.
Listen, I was gonna. Yes.
Bill Murray and Tom are in the top 10.
But yeah, I feel like his specific kind, because almost all of his lines were improv'd. I think his specific kind of improvisation, and then also him playing like an actual, that is a supportive friend. That is a supportive, collaborative friend. He's not being, he's taking the piss out of him, but he like,
he's not sad and he's not arrogant. And it's so weird to see Bill Murray not sad and not arrogant.
It's so nice.
You know, he plays a little bit of, I guess arrogance wouldn't be the right way to put it, but there's something in that early birthday party where he's he's kind of being a little bit of the douche or nonsensical.
Oh yeah,
like, as they're kind of that I get a little bit of that old Bill Murray, that kind of thing. I have a version too.
I also think like if you view it as, so he's got a friend that he believes in, who is just such an asshole that everyone, like, very few of his, he doesn't have many friends, but it's his birthday and you're trying to like flesh things out. So it's like, you're just trying to get him in. You're just trying to get him out. And so it's like, he comes off a little arrogant because he's trying to host a party for a very unlikable man.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And it's weird.
He's also
like,
hosting at a table, holding court. Like, he never moves from the one table. Every time they cut back to him, it's just different people around him while he's just rambling at them. Like, it's a good bit.
I want a play that only plays in the rain. I want a theater that's only opened when it's raining. That's my favorite animal in the zoo of an art party is the writer posted up at a table. It's like, I gotta go see what's happening over here. That's hilarious. I'm gonna go. I'll be back. This sounds fun. I gotta watch the actors break up in the corner first, though.
I don't know if this is common knowledge, but we do owe this character to Elaine May, who came in as uncredited screenwriter on this one and suggested that Dustin needs a roommate to sort of play against so that he can, you know, talk. We can figure out what's going on in his head. And he has somebody to kind of bounce ideas, blah, blah, blah.
It's a very different movie if he's sitting by himself,
right,
being Dorothy versus, like, I want to look pretty for her.
if he's saying that to himself in the mirror, like, we're just golleming.
That's the horror movie version of Tootsie.
Yeah. Oh, we could totally recut a trailer for this movie that was a horror movie.
Sounds like someone has a job to do.
McGee, you famously hate Jessica Lange. I'm curious how her performance actually worked for you in this.
What do I hate her in?
Cape Fear. You want to cut her scene in the Cape Fear episode.
Oh, yeah.
It has nothing to do with her. It has everything to do with the amount of sexism on that thing. Leave Jessica Lange out of it. She was phenomenal. She was doing the best with what she could.
I loved her in that film. I loved her scene in that one. McGee less so.
Damn, I didn't even know I was getting jumped.
I'm sorry, I gotta stretch. I gotta, like, I'm huffy. I
don't have anything to say about Jessica Lange.
I know, because you're worried that you're gonna get sniped now. My mustache has you intimidated.
Other than I think that she should have rejected him at the end. I think that would have made more sense for the character and for the arc of the movie in general. I don't, like, she's fine. She's very charming. She plays like somebody that you would fall in love with. I think her and I almost said Terry Gross instead of Terry Garr. different movie.
Terry, disgusting, am I right?
Her and Terry Garr are like contrasting performances off of each other as like different actresses struggling, obviously on different sides of the struggle. Like, you know, Terry Garr's character is just struggling to make it and not sure if she belongs and all that. And then seeing Jessica Lange's character as somebody who's already made it, but she's, you know, like
she's not happy.
Drinking to get through it. She's not happy about it. She's like stuck in this shit relationship with the director because it's good for her career. And everything kind of sucks for her. I don't think that her performance was bad in any way. It's a little wild to me that she got the Oscar for it because it like singled out as the best performance.
It was nominated.
I wouldn't have walked.
It was nominated for a ton of Oscars, so many.
Yeah, is an Oscar darling, or a campaign at least.
So I'm not talking shit about her performance at all. It's just not the one walking out of the movie, I wouldn't have been like top of mind her performance, if that makes sense.
Right.
I'm looking up what else was up for, or who else was up for that year. Because that would be interesting to know. Carry on. I'm doing a thing.
Yeah, while she's doing that, let's talk about the big guns. Dustin Hoffman, this is like, you know, an actor's actor movie. He takes it over. He renames it Tootsie, something that his grandmother called him or something like that. Tootsie Wootsie or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Hoffman, was there anyone better? Would you have recast him? We have a game we could play. is there anybody better than Hoffman for the role that you would have?
I think Dustin Hoffman needed this role personally. So if anyone knows about how his on-set behavior, he's a radical dick, and especially really upsetting. He's also super disrespectful to women. He slapped Meryl Streep in Kramer versus Kramer, and then it's interesting that like a few years after, he's in Tootsie. And even hearing him describe like what it feels like to be in 2-inch heels, he's like, I'm not even in high heels. I'm just in like the small ones that I'd never look at a woman if she was in these heels. And it's like, kid, you're too short to be looking at women in heels. But but like just him like even having to have that moment and have this moment in understanding the balance between femininity, it's like, I think you needed to be this amount of a dick and had to like go through this. Wear your padded ass. Like, try to keep your lipstick in line. Welcome to it. He also didn't feel pretty, and he was so sad about that.
Yeah, you know, so, this is what I kind of want. So I want a second net. I think there is something about not the one-to-one transfer, but it's you know kind of he's pulling from some actual credible experiences for this role to kind of create this person. I've actually taken Dustin Hoffman's masterclass. So forgive me, but it's
I'm
really
obsessed with this. This is a fun lore drop.
Yeah. So it's he obviously has, you know, professional training himself, classical training himself. And in his master class, he just is with a workshop with a group of students, and he's having them kind of perform dialogue. And you see, you can see him work a scene and like actually get it to an emotive or an emotional place in a way that you just don't, like, very few people are able to do the thing and coach it. So he feels like he knows. He has an ability to communicate, perform, and simplify to teach anybody that I think goes so hand in hand with this character and is so necessary for, you know, the bit that I'm and when I say there's a bit in this masterclass where there's a guy and a girl seeing a dialogue scene between the two of them. The girl we end up learning is she has a fiance, the guy's single, and Dustin kind of points out a moment in which you could tell the guy was disappointed to learn that in the scene. Like he was initially he was more excited to like hit on her at first, and then learning on that, like he gets a little bit more demure, and Dustin picks up on that, and then he says, you need to use that sort of embarrassment or whatever it is that you're going through in this, in like how he builds on that moment to create the scene in the workshop. Like, fuck, dude, like identifying that, being able to play against that and teaching somebody to do that. It's like, that is so much what I feel like in the Michael Dorsey, and then how you're the credibility that goes on to perform as Tootsie makes the movie. And that's where I can see like this goes maybe beyond, this isn't fair. I was going to shit on some black cinema. I'm not going to do that. Well, let's say, you know who I could shit on? This is what kind of makes it not like a Madea kind of clowning, or this is not we go further than the bit of like, hey, ha-ha-ha, isn't it funny? I just put on a dress kind of thing. Like there's an intimacy about the performance that I think he brings to it that you want to say, it feels like you want to respond to that, Ned.
Well, no, I was about to say Dorothy isn't a joke. He respects Dorothy. He cares about Dorothy. Her reputation matters to him. Like, how she is seen, how she is perceived. He wants her to feel pretty. He, like...
That's my favorite line in the... my favorite line in the whole movie is when he's like, I think Dorothy's smarter than I am.
Oh, love that.
And then he's just, I just wish I looked prettier. She deserves it. It's so,
cute.
Heart-wrenching. Just like, oh my God, man. Like, yeah, you're deep
and
in
like,
it.
As a drag performer, I have moments like that with like, so Uncle Aunt is my drag persona. And like, there are times where I buy things for her. Because I'm like, she deserves this fabric is a little bit more expensive than I'd ever get from me. Mm. But Uncle Aunt deserves that. And it's because she deserves to feel glamorous. She deserves to feel like this. And
yeah,
like there are purses that are just like, that's not my purse. That's her purse. Mm. Like I don't carry that purse. Uncle Aunt carries that purse. And so I really respect having that relationship with your performance. Where it's like you have to respect what you love, because if you're a creator, you're a god in some kind of way, and you might as well be a kind god. So
yeah. Do you find that helps you like turn it on, like having those kind of totems?
Oh yeah. It's someone we just did a Catherine O'Hara performance show. And I was her as Moira Rose. And yeah, she doesn't wear tiny glasses, but Uncle Aunt wears tiny glasses. So I had tiny glasses on, but they were a little bit more obtrusive than usual. And I was just making a joke. I'm like, I can't see anything. And someone was like, well, take them off. She wouldn't wear that. I'm like, but Uncle Aunt wears glasses.
Yeah.
She does. I'm sorry. Right. Like, don't be ridiculous. Uncle Aunt wears tiny glasses. Like, don't be a fool. But... yeah, it's and I think that's the same thing with like how he feels about the fact that he's being so thorough with the body,
right,
too, is so interesting. And like, I also think that there's an interesting gender journey of him like realizing the parts of him that are like, no, I am a man.
Mm-hmm.
Like he has those moments, but they're not like, I don't know. I think it's a little bit more nuanced than it should be for that time period sometimes.
For sure.
Yeah.
Especially like in the height of like the AIDS crisis too. So.
Can I follow up with my best line? McGee shared.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I love the off of, Hoffman claiming like he didn't get to perform for the Iceman Cometh. I love fucking Sydney following up with the quote, oh sure, God forbid you ruin your standing as a cult failure. Like, I love it.
Oh my God. What a fucking dagger.
A personal attack.
Oh, I love that.
Y'all can just carve that on my gravestone.
Yeah, from the top rope, man. Yeah. That was brutal.
So good. Matt, anything from you?
Oh, yeah. It's like off the Terry Garr, like, you know, after she gives us the classic, like, I've read the Cinderella Complex. I'm in control of my complete or my own orgasm.
Yeah.
I just don't like being lied to. I love when he's like, but can't we still be friends? And she goes, oh,
yeah.
I don't take this shit from friends, only from lovers. It's such a beautiful line. Because, like, I have a, like, I'm a friends with my exes kind of gal.
Nope.
Like, I don't believe that if anyone's mattered to you, like, sometimes they're worth keeping in. But there's some people that got cut because I'm like, oh, no, my darling, you were never a friend. So that's, like, and that's such a great, like, way for us to, like, leave her besides her just screaming at the TV during the reveal.
Right.
It's, like, her... So she was actually one of the other actresses up for Best Supporting Actress, which I do think she should have gotten.
That'd be so interesting. For this performance, do you think?
For this performance, yeah. Well, I mean, she's adorable. You know this girl.
Mm-hmm.
You know this girl.
Mm-hmm.
I think
comedy gets more shit at the Oscars than horror. I'm just going to put this out here. So I feel like I think you would never really get it.
Though.
Say it one more time.
It is objectively not true.
No, absolutely. Like, comedy never gets any kind of award love at all.
Yeah.
Like horror gets
Norbit
way
has
more,
one.
Way
Norbit
more
has Norbit.
They never honor comedy at all. I think that's way more in the dirt than horror ever is. But if they were to acknowledge.
They're both. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's because they're both more visceral responses.
The Oscars
of being
hate you
human.
Both. Don't worry.
Yeah.
I think
what, a black man
this.
And a woman? Yeah, 100%. We know that.
I think Terry Gard nominated for this performance could have been really cool.
She's phenomenal.
Yeah.
I totally agree.
I love Terry Gard. Gone too soon.
Best fit. Can we get into this is a movie about fits. Let me jump in here. We want to credit Ruth Morlay, who was a costume designer of this film. I emailed you guys my best fit. And it's during Tootsie in the it could have been any of the – what's fascinating about the Tootsie role, I find, is we get her in a lot of the administrative kind
of gear.
Not
the Tootsie role.
Tootsie role.
That's the name of a candy.
what's hilarious about this is we get her in a lot of administrative kind of gear, so we don't necessarily we do see or get her opportunities to get out of that, and she's doing something more exotic, like in this photo shoot where she has this gun or this guy going on, and then like use the cover of this with the cowboy kind of like baseball thing going. It's interesting just to see her outside of just like some of the dresses that were, and then battling that in the film of like what makes Tootsie look flattering and Dustin Hoffman kind of like battling that, I found to be a unique perspective for this one that I liked a lot. So
I also love in that scene that they have her with Andy Warhol.
Yeah, like, Warhol.
I think that is a nod to the people that knew.
You said that.
Because like when everyone acts like, oh, it's so convincing, I'm like, oh, so you don't have any bricks in your friend group. Okay. That's cool. Like, I'm just like the people who know, like, I feel like queer people would be like, all right, girl, I see you. Come on. And that's kind of the vibe I got by Andy Warhol being involved.
Okay. Help me out. I'm so sorry. What, bricks in your friend group? What's that mean?
it's an expression for sometimes when you are a more masculine looking woman. So it's like you've got the dolls and the bricks. I'm not the best expert as a cis woman to be talking about this, but it is a thing in the queer community to be like, so the dolls are the super fabulous, and sometimes you have to be a brick to be a doll. And as a ally to the trans community, baby, we protect both bricks and dolls in this house. So
learn it. All right. Did anybody else have a best fit?
I mean, all of the Tootsie fits were good. In particular, just as a bit, I really like the military-esque terrible trench coat that the director is always wearing. You just really sell how much he sucks. He's always wearing this like.
You love military gear. What are you talking about?
First off,
but he specifically has like a Nazi coated like trench coat on all the time.
Fair.
And it's just a subtle little piece that I really enjoyed.
They talk in the commentary that he's styled after Sydney. Like he's a lot of his wardrobe is built on like Sydney's closet. Or not, I don't know directly, but that's where they're pulling the inspiration from. He's a Sydney composite. Yeah. So yeah, that's
My favorite look is the when Michael and Jeff are both trying to like distract Sandy, when Michael has to get out of drag and Jeff like needs to pretend he was in the shower or he was like getting dressed or whatever. And I had a dream, you had giant teeth. You were still really nice though, or whatever.
I like the line where it kind of makes it sound like she's like, I had giant what?
Where he's in like a sarong and the lowest, most like gym twink tee you've ever seen. It's just like the deepest V. It's an irrational cut.
Like
I used to work at this, at the shop in Chicago in Boys Town, it's like we're mainly like wigs and costumes and vintage and stuff like that. But we have a little section for the circuit gays. And one of the things that cracked me up is like the tanks that were so low, like the deep Vs that were so low. It blew my mind. And I'm like, oh, he has some Andrew Christian on. That's a wild shirt to see in wild. So I was thinking.
I was thinking this looks like it's a leftover like shirt from a pirate themed theater show that they were in. Like this was definitely the undershirt of a costume.
Oh, you're right. That's 100% what it is. Is that like, how they started? Guys, all right. Sorry. Everyone listening to this podcast, don't worry about it. We figured out the origins. Let me hack into the mainframe. All right.
I love it. And let's hack into the end of this film. The best shots coming up after this.
Ash, your podcaster of choice at Once Weekly Make Me Watch is right for you. Proven to reduce time spent ambling through streaming services and alleviate dull commutes. Follow along our Shot for Shot segment on your social media platform of choice with links provided in the show notes. Make me watch.
You will.
Contact us if you observe any of the following reactions upon exposure: an overwhelming desire to suggest a film, a burning need to correct our pronunciation, or excessive pocket change. Special thanks to Nick and Jay Shute, Mike from Failing Hollywood, and Adam from Pod It Together. Additional music provided by Kevin McLeod. Full credits in the show notes below.
Welcome back from break. We're going behind the lens, breaking down the film's craftsmanship and its curtain close. You can follow this segment in our show notes along with the best fit. Get a look at some of these shots. Get a look at some of these fits. And we're talking about Owen Roizman. Is it Roy? I think it's Roizman. Famous DP. He's got a hell of a reel. So talking about Tootsie here, I wanted to open up with the actual opening because I think this is Sydney talks about in the commentary of this film. This is one of the last things they shot. And it's, you know, Michael, the makeup case, the makeup techniques that he's using to kind of get into these different auditions and roles. And I think it's, I mentioned a little earlier that we don't necessarily get a lot of the film. It feels like we're a lot of cowboy shots. It feels like maybe waist up kind of stuff,
yeah.
Like medium close ups. Yeah. I feel like the film's kind of built. It relies really heavily on that. So I like some of these, some of the more artistic stuff. Like the one specifically, well, two things. I love the mustache kind of coming off a little bit and him just pressing it and like smiling a little bit, like just a great like beat to kind of like cut out on. And I love the I don't know what it's called. What's the eyebrow thing? Like the if your eyebrow kind of
curler.
No, it's like
the eyelash curler.
Eyelash curl, like that shot, like that profile eyelash curler shot. Things like that. Those two shots I really dig. Like the Anyway, so
it's wild to that this is the entirety of the setup for the fact that he could do a full drag look.
Yeah.
Like this is all we've seen, and then from here, 30 minutes later in the movie.
Right.
He thinks about it, and we smash cut to him in full drag. No montage.
Does it work for you guys?
No getting ready sequence.
Would you prefer him kind of like on a superhero thing? Like I'm building the costume, I'm building the look. Like I got the Spider-Man sketches on the.
If you're someone who knows how to grab your spirit gum to make your wrinkles, you know how to feminize your face. Like if you got that
and
Ben
what's
Nye
that technique
kit,
one more time you said what was the technique to
if you feminize your face
no but what so was like, the thing if you said spearmint gum on the what
oh spirit gum is the it's a skin safe adhesive that holds really well through sweat and so like usually if you have like you'll see a lot of times actors use it. That's what they keep their mustaches on with or something like that. But if you put it on a place that's wrinkly and you crunch up your face, you can kind of get some wrinkles set in that are more natural.
Interesting.
And or you so, like make real big eyes and put it on. And then when you like rest, everything gets all like.
Yeah. You're using your face's natural like moves. Like if you were, this is really great radio. If you see like where my worry wrinkle is right here, where it's like I would definitely want to highlight that because like when I emote, you'll actually see that come in. I'm expressing my age again, listeners. Oldest time they call me.
I think the only way that I would want to see a like getting ready montage sequence is if it was still done from that place of really knowing that lived in experience. Like it would definitely be something that I would want them to call in somebody to help them with the reference there to really get that sequence right, because I think you could get story and get humor from the real lived in thing, but if you're not adding anything, then I don't mind them just smashing to the full.
He like Dorothy gets softer. Dorothy blends her makeup better. Like the makeup gets better. The illusion gets better the longer she goes around. And I do love that they didn't make her just look horrible. They made her realistic. She just wasn't cute, you know. And, like, in those first scenes, like, that is a gray beard. We see that beard so hard, but, like, it's a very, but then she, and then she learns how to color correct it. Mm. So, she, okay, okay, trans icon, Dorothy Michaels. But, yeah, so I totally agree, though, that, like, us spending that time in their work is really interesting.
Absolutely.
Because my shot is the very opposite, because I just think it's a really funny reminder that they don't know what they're doing, is having her fully shave with a full face of makeup on. It's wild to me. Like, I do think it's sort of like a really beautiful, evocative shot, but it's like, it's my
favorite. It's for the trailer, for sure.
It's like, it's one of the more problematic things that they'll do for, like, the, it's a man and then a woman's body, and just have, like, a woman shaving or something like that. When it's like, yeah, okay, but it is just such a, like, oh, you would never shave with, like, what, the upper half of your, the amount of makeup is that is on that woman's face.
Right.
Literally gets called out several times by being like, oh my goodness. Do you ever worry about your skin? Because that is cake makeup, my friend.
Right. But, I didn't even pick up on that. That's a great point.
Oh yeah.
I didn't pick up on it either. That's definitely, oh, no, that shows you the much needed perspective. Yeah.
There's a whole line where it's like Julie's like, do you ever worry about your skin with this amount of makeup on?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. I just wasn't thinking about it during shaving. I just didn't even
know. Oh, yeah.
Looking at the shot, I didn't clock that, yeah, just how much like eyeshadow she has.
Oh
on
my
while
gosh.
She's shaving.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
that's really funny.
Yeah, if you have that amount of makeup on, Sean's seen me in drag before and in different states of undrag, and it's been comedy every moment of that undrag because I do full body paint usually.
Wow.
And so it'll just be like, oh, that's ridiculous. This is a ridiculous way for a human to look.
That's hilarious. But you got a few nice ones here.
Yeah, so mine are kind of paired up here. There's from like 40-ish minutes in, where there's a little montage of Dorothy's character really hitting the airwaves and connecting with the people. And the first one is this like pan down of a woman at her desk working away, and she's got the one like ear pod in and a little tiny TV just sticking up out of a drawer that she's watching her soaps on. And the other one, just like the women all kind of like gather around the TV from a few minutes later. Like, I love these little moments that are cementing how the character is like really hitting with everybody. Like as Dorothy is, you know, finding more self-confidence in who she is and defining the character and inspiring the people around her to do the same. And it's like, then it's like the level of influence is just getting wider and wider. Like, you're seeing these like groups of people gathered around the TV and like people running up to them on the street and shit. It's a really just kind of fun little sequence, but these two shots, for being like pretty bad comp jobs with the,
yeah, supposed to, I know how
TV.
Mad you are about that comp job.
It was really, I was like, come on, that's that. They're not watching that. That's so clearly the footage put on top of footage in post. but the shot itself, I did love it. The second one, especially when it's all the women like turned around looking at the TV and all of their hairstyles like echo the one that they're looking at. Like, it's just a bunch of giant floofs of hair. It just makes me giggle a little bit.
I mean, I think especially in the 80s, like, you had a lot of like, okay, so we fought this hard for feminism, and then you're seeing kind of like a conservative bent get women back in the workplace and try to be, or back in the home and back in like traditional female roles. Reagan's the devil. But yeah, I do think like a huge part of that is like you seeing that no matter what, there is this, even the most like conservative woman, like older woman I know, is still has more gumption than she'll ever give herself credit for. Like, whenever I meet like a boomer lady where I'm like, Nah, no one's taking you down without a fight. You're pretty terrifying. You just need to channel that in the right spot. The Karens as an army is a powerful army. We just need to channel it correctly. So.
I think this is too, it's like the, just like daytime television as a like woman's art form. Yeah. So therefore bad and trashy. It's always been the like lower class of actors and creatives that work on it, like because it is a you know for single moms or whatever.
It's the same reason why textile work is considered craft and like painting is considered art, where technically textile work is way more useful, and it's always considered craft because it's primarily a woman's medium, and like you think of it as stagecraft.
Right.
Which is a very women's centered medium. Not to be this one, but here we are.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So. I mean, that's what we're talking Tootsie, baby.
We're talking Tootsie, baby. Also, can I have a weird shot thing, though? What I was realizing again after watching this is, so obviously the party scene kind of, I won't say it's like a shot for shot, but there's some mirroring moments of the party scene in The Graduate. Which is one of my absolute favorite Dustin Hoffman movies. Like, I love The Graduate so much. But, like, that opening party scene where he's just trying to, like, survive through it.
Right.
You have, like, him doing a similar thing, only it's him just, like, biffing with all these women.
Yeah.
And then...
What are your plans
we get
this summer?
The shot. It's...
yeah.
You got a beautiful face. You have to be an actress. Then when we get the shot where it's like, and he's Tootsie, that is so close to the Midnight Cowboy shot.
Oh, interesting.
And okay. I was like, which Midnight Cowboy is also the only movie that I think John Voight is somewhat tolerable in.
Oh, no.
And
Heat. John Voight is excellent in Heat.
Is it weird that it's like, I don't feel like his soul is corrupted completely in Midnight Cowboy. I feel like I can smell the rot of his soul by Heat. Does that make sense?
But it's good. But that makes sense for his Heat, character. Though.
Yeah, but you know that thing where you're like, I know you're giving a good performance, but... You know, like...
It's like...
Like, it's the same way every time I enjoy a Quentin Tarantino thing, I'm like... Begrudgingly, sir.
What?
So, if you were in a room with me, I wouldn't care for it.
Fucking. What's the other dude? Casino.
Jodie Foster.
Casino. The one that. Oh my god.
Joey Pants. Sorry. I'm just naming people.
I get that same thing. I don't want to slow up the episode.
Reagan.
Ronald Reagan.
No.
Ronald Reagan. Star of Welcome to Bozo's Town or whatever that is.
Let's I guess I'm here now. James Woods. Jesus, that's what I'm
James.
Where it's like an excellent,
oh my God.
Excellent
Have
actor. I hate
Straight
you
Talk?
As a person, but excellent. It's not like fucking, who do I hate? I don't know. Jared Leto, like, right, I hate you as a performer and an actor, or in a person. James Wood, like, I hate you as a person, but you're an excellent performer. Like,
have you seen Straight Talk?
No. Straight Cock?
So...
What'd you say? What was it?
Okay, so just because I'm suggesting the movie doesn't mean that's what it's called.
Wait, what did you... I didn't hear...
Straight Talk.
Straight Talk?
Oh, Straight Talk.
Talk.
Oh, Talk.
Gotcha. T-A-L-K?
Yeah, gotcha.
So think about how adorable Dolly Parton is. It's the only movie where she, like, no matter how hard she's trying, no organic chemistry can happen between her and James Woods.
Oh, really?
It drives me insane. And there's a part at the end where the cops come by and they're like, do you need help? And when we were screening it, I was like, she does. Save her from James Woods. And it was my first time watching it. And I was just like, I'm sorry. I can't. I got to speak up. Straight Talk. James Woods does not do a good job in it.
Did you ever see the Onion Fields, or is it the Onion Field? What is it? Early James Wood performance, where he's kind of playing like this, almost like a cult leader, or at least he has the charisma of a cult leader, and he's building up this quote unquote family. He is so sinewy and uncomfortable and weird in it, but a fucking fantastic film. If you're getting,
I mean, he's great in Hercules.
Yeah,
but he's not great in Straight Talk.
That's hilarious. Let's.
I'm doing a dive through his filmography. Sorry. Welcome to James Woods Talk.
Next week's guest.
I want to wrap up here with Combo Craft, and I think the big finale is something of true note. Sydney kind of talks about the complexity of this scene and Michael's reveal on it. It just didn't really even hit me until hearing him speak about this, where and you know, I shouldn't say it didn't hit me, because a lot of these films on films are like, when you're shooting, when an actual film crew, we have to like shoot a fake film crew doing it and then cut that all together. There's obviously a level of complexity there, but in the way that they're doing it here, the added, like, you know, we had three fake, you know, cameras on the quote unquote on set. Then we got, you know, three real film cameras, and we're sort of orchestrating that. And then you have, you know, your however he's cut, maybe there's a 50 mil here, a 30 mil there, 70 over there, and he's like having to call all of this out so that this cuts together is like a live edit in the actual edit. Like, that's just a level of complexity. Which is like, fuck, dude, you really gotta have your shot list together to kind of know what you're doing here, I would imagine. But impressive as hell, and you know, a veteran. I'm not sure how many films this would be for Sydney, like 10, 15 at this point that he's
at.
And when we get to Tootsie, I'm assuming a storied background before you get to this kind of level of shot, which works really well because it does feel like a live performance that we're getting at. So love the combo of crafts that come out of this.
No, that is that's a really detailed like orchestra of execution there.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's the thing that I find really interesting, because I think why most films about films deal with actors is because actors are like the one part where they have to dig deep. If you're like they have to dig deep, tear apart their soul, tear apart their ego, build it back up, and then go play somebody else. And it's like a good actor will. And then a bad actor is whatever they're doing happens too. And but like, I think sometimes as people behind the camera, you don't really have to dive in as much. So I do think like there being those like little moments where you see just like, dude, whatever chaos y'all are doing, whatever nonsense you are bringing to the table, I'm just shooting. I'm just going to shoot, and I'm going to shoot what looks good. Like, oh, we should cut the cameras. No, we're not cutting the cameras. That's not what I've been trained to do. I've been trained to find the shot. And so you kind of see those moments of a tiny rebellion in the crew a lot, where it's like, the director might want that, but I will do this because... Also, can you imagine having someone go off script that much? And how much you'd hate them.
A live
they would be fired so fucking fast.
Oh, throw them out a window. My goodness. Like, I'm here for an improver, but...
I don't want to take away the emotive quality of some of those focus pulls, though. It's like when they just hit it just right for some of those things. It's a craft that goes unappreciated.
Oh, that's
the truth. That's the truth. Thank you.
Are we pressing play on this again? Where are we moving on to?
It's infinitely rewatchable.
I think I'd throw it on. I think
you forget about it for a little bit, and then you put it on again, and you're like, actually, this movie rules. And you just scream it into the ether. I have found.
Yeah. We were talking about
it. You know, I'll check back in with you when enough time has passed that I haven't thought about Tootsie in a while. I'll put this back on and let you know if I scream into the ether.
This is going to be our, Morgan Freeman, Andy Dufresne moment, where it's like, hey guys, anytime you're watching Tootsie, you have to text the group chat. Just have to text the group chat and just text it infinitely rewatchable, and we'll all know what happened that very day.
Look for a volcanic rock that doesn't belong there.
Exactly. And you will find your copy of Tootsie. Just kidding. It's Crocodile Dundee 2.
You know what? So, great pick. Thank you so much, Nat, for bringing this to us. 1982's Tootsie. One of her favorites that she puts on the header of all the flowcharts. So it's fantastic to finally get a chance to break this down here.
Also, if anyone actually follows that and found a movie that they're really excited about, will you just message us? I'm just always intrigued to see if someone just like found a movie they'd never thought about watching before, because I have some weird shit on there. And I just knowing I've match made someone with a new movie sometimes. Hell, it's just good for my soul.
Reach out, please. And stick with us as we get into the theme of next month. We got an exciting one. Actually, one partially, Uncle Nat's here because it's partially responsible for our next month theme. So,
for what reason? I'm a sensible woman.
Let's get into it after the break.
Coming this April to video stores everywhere.
After Easter, so Jesus doesn't feel like.
Get into this.
Well, that's our next guest,
James Wood and Jesus.
Jesus is really into Training Day.
This is your Training Day, Officer Jesus.
It's just James Wood with that fucking smile on his face. My man.
You got a dick and two pockets on the other side of that would change. Pay for this. All right, everybody. We're getting to our next theme. Really excited about this one. 420 special. I think we've landed on the name, right? Are we going with the 420?
It's a 420 special. Yeah.
Hell yeah, I like it. Nat's got a zine and some themes coming for the Patreon, Uncle Ant's private stash. We got some selects. This is going to be a fun month, guys. Looking forward to 420.
I'm very excited about it. My one thing is, if you have ever wondered whether or not you should throw some money at these two gentlemen, you should. Because the 420 prize for those who throw a little bit of cashola at these two gentlemen is going to be a little bit more fun and a little bit more stupid than all the other kind of fun, stupid things that I've done already.
I love it.
So
get in there. Support us. Patreon.
Give up your
watch.
Nickels, babies.
And look forward to what we have coming up for the 420 special next month. Uncle Nat, thank you so much. This has been awesome. One of our favorite guests on the podcast. Always bringing us some wild choices. And
hear
particularly
that,
coming
Max,
up next month.
You've been bested, Max. He's got a silver streak in his hair now. He's straight up a super villain. I have to.
Right, some great stuff coming up. Looking forward to it, guys. Catch you next week. Hey, if you made it to the end of our show, you're the real MVP, and we want to thank you. If you want to reach out to us, email us at makemewatchpodcast@gmail.com. Find us on all your socials at makemewatchpodcast. Links are in the show notes. If you rate and review, shout out to you. Thanks. I'm going to tell you a little something. Sean doesn't want you to know there's exclusive content on our Patreon page where you can go to support the show, but you didn't hear that from me. Anyway, artwork by Supplaybox, theme song by Soul Spy. Coming soon, folks.